All right. So the reason why we're all here tonight, is because, she probably doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to give her one anyway. We really appreciate you coming out and celebrating your birthday here at the 1600 Club. And then we just celebrated 50 years, and we're honored to have you here tonight. Nikki, come on up. Share your experience. Yeah.
Hi everyone, my name's Nikki, I'm an alcoholic. And I am very grateful to be here tonight. It's an honor to be asked to come and share my story. And I think if you're like me, you want to know the stats, right? So my sobriety date is July 1st of 1989. And I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I have a backup sponsor when I can't get a hold of her. And they both have been sober for over 30 years. So I feel like I'm pretty blessed to have really strong women in my life. And one of them is a huge book thumper, and the other one is a really big God person. So like, she always asks if I pray, and the other one wants to know if I can find something in the book. So I feel like that's good for me. And my very first meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous was in this very room in 1985. And I feel like that's, I love this place. This place feels like home to me. And my home has actually changed a lot outside of here, but this has always been where I've come back from my recovery home, so to speak. So I'm really, really grateful today to be here. My mom is here, so that's probably going to be kind of weird for her. Sorry, Mom. I am her only kid, but I'm the last of my dad's five kids. And I was raised in Hispanic. She's white, but my dad was Mexican. And we were closer to my dad's Mexican family. I didn't even know I looked different than my family until I was older. Actually, when I went to first grade at Catholic school, and they called me Weta, and I came home crying, and I said, "What is Weta? That's bad." And my dad, one of the things I remember that he did that was sweet is he put me in his lap, and he said, "Mijita, it's okay. Your skin is white like your mama's, but your heart is brown like daddy's." So, anyhow, but the thing that's kind of important about that is that right away, I always knew there was something different about me than from everyone else, right? And so, like, I know when I was new in recovery, I would come to meetings and I would listen for, like, all the differences that would be make me different from you. And what my sponsor said is, quit doing that. Start trying to find the things that are the similarities, right? So if you're looking to shred me as a human, you'll find plenty of things to talk shit about. That's cool. But if you're looking to find similarities, hopefully you will, because, you know, I am a low bottom drunk, a high bottom drunk. I didn't go to prison and all that shit, and that's great. If you did, and that's a part of your story, I respect the fuck out of you for being here. But I didn't have that in my story, and I want to make sure that that's clear, because I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 15 years old, right? That's pretty young. So when I got here, there was all a bunch of white-haired people. But anyhow, so really, you don't need a drunk-a-log. Like, that's, you guys know how to drink, right? So you don't need that. So I can just tell you that I did like the feeling produced by alcohol. So, like, the longer I'm sober, the less I really want to get nitty-gritty about, like, I drank this or that. I can tell you that my dad, poor guy, he hid his bottles of booze. He mostly drank vodka. I hated when he drank gin because I really don't like gin. And if you're stealing alcohol from your parents and that's what they drink, you're going to drink a lot of gin. Ugh. But he eventually switched from gin to vodka. Loved that. And he hid his bottles all over the house, and then my mom marked them so that she knew how much he'd been drinking. And that poor son of a bitch had no idea that I was hip-sipping off his bottles. He's getting a little bit more trouble than he needed to be, but and, you know, I was young, so alcohol wasn't accessible. So I don't know, you know, if you're older and you can't relate to that, just be patient. I could not go to the bar. I could not go to an like a liquor store or something and buy alcohol. I had to have an older boyfriend or somebody that was willing to buy it and give it a test. And, you know, there were plenty of people that helped out with that. And then the other thing was is that drugs is a big part of my story in particular because you know, it was accessible. So that's something I did. And I did stupid shit. So just so you understand that I was stupid while using was they brought... I went to Santa Maria High, and they brought the dogs in to sniff the lockers one day. So everybody had been smoking pot in the alley, right? Like, right? And I said, don't worry, I'll put it in my jacket. And I pulled the lining out of my, like, I had a jacket. I don't even know. It was baby blue. I remember that. And I took everybody else's shit and put it in my jacket and walked around campus like, don't worry, I got your back. And they were, like, happy to give it to me so they didn't get in trouble. And I was too stupid to realize that that was probably a bad idea. I didn't get in trouble, thank God, but like that was stupid. Who does that? I did. Thank you. But I did other dumb things, like I called out a girl out of a classroom, stood in the middle of the football field and just started screaming. Her name was Heather de Havilland. I remember it to this day. And she had looked at my boyfriend and I didn't appreciate it. So I went out in the middle of this football field and I had a big mouth and a bad attitude and I started calling her out. Well, she came out, put her head out. Looked outside, went back in, and her teacher, I swear to God, shoved her out the door and shut the door like, you're going outside. We don't want her coming in. And they didn't help her. God, you know, things have changed a little bit since then and now. But what happened was eventually they brought the school nurse out to the site, like something's going on. Somebody needs to come out here. And when they asked me what had happened, I totally lied and said that I was on asthma medication. It made me unpredictable, and they bought it. And they let me go, man. And I was like, really? And this girl was, like, terrified of me. To this day, she's like, won't even talk to me. That's fine. But, like, whatever. But I can just tell you that that's not normal behavior, right? And average people don't do things like that. But I didn't think clearly, and I didn't have a whole lot of self-esteem. So if someone looked at my boyfriend, that would obviously, well... he's going to go with you. He's not going to want to be with me. And I just didn't have any value for myself. And it was horrific to live like that all the time with this big, dark pit inside of me. And I was just looking for something to stick in that to make me feel better, right? And, you know, other people found really cool stuff. My family wasn't really wealthy, so I didn't have anything cool to offer that way. Like, I just didn't have any of those things that other people did, so it was crazy. And I had a big mouth, and I was willing to do just about anything. And I would dance and be wild and stupid and just driving cars with people I didn't know. And that might not sound like a big deal to you, but there were more than one time that I found myself in a bad predicament. And eventually, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to talk about that because, see, I've spent more years sober than I ever did drinking. So what's happened, if you can't relate, gosh, I'm so sorry, but I got here, and I heard these speakers, okay, so my dad got sober, my mom's in Al-Anon, she said, get your ass to a meeting, I don't know, I wasn't privy to that information, and next thing you know, he was going to a recovery facility, he went to North County Cottage Care, and I went along for their outpatient treatment, and I got, like, a lot of information, and then I proceeded to try to kill myself because I didn't want to do this anymore. I couldn't live with all that stuff that they were talking about, and then the way I felt inside, I just couldn't bear it. And I did attempt suicide, and I remember coming to in the hospital, and the look, oh, my God, the look is horrific. And if you're here, then I'm going to guess that you already know what that look looks like because somebody's given it to you. Maybe several somebody's has given it to you. So I had to do something, right? And so before I had tried to die, I had been like an honor roll student, super achiever in all the high classes, planning like college prep. And I came back and I literally was taking a class called watercolors. I don't know what the hell happened. They like, I know my parents went to the school, had some kind of conversation with them because all of a sudden I had to have all of my classes checked off with my teachers because they were like, we want to just make sure you get to every class and whatever. And it like any connection that I had to achieving academically was completely gone. Because I didn't give a shit anymore. And it took a long time before I started to really care about anything after that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on a Friday night in this very room when the tables, you know, the tables how they're normally set up, right? And there were these guys that sat along over here, and we called them, like, Serenity Row, and they were the old fucks. And I thought they were okay, and my dad was here, and my mom went to Al-Anon in the back, and we sat in here, and And I liked you people because you laughed, right? You laughed and it just felt safe here. So like out there, I never felt safe. I felt afraid always. But here it felt safe, like it was okay to just be here. And I remember thinking that that was kind of cool, right? So then, of course, I didn't get to stay here from that point. Like I some time went by and I did use more in the end of my drinking. I used more than I drank, but I went to see a speaker. They had him out at the Union 76 up at the top up there. I don't know if anybody's from here and has ever been up there. But they had this group come in, and they were called Dog on the Roof. Anybody ever heard of them? They're down from, like, L.A.-ish, which somewhere down there. And they had this club and this group, and these young people, not white hairs, came, and they shared about their recovery. And I remember listening and just being rapt, like, oh, my God, they're sober, and they're laughing, and they're doing shit together, and they're going to dances, and they're having a good time. And they were, like, going to school, and they had jobs, and I thought, that's cool. And I remember talking to my dad and saying, Dad, I think maybe I have a real problem. And he was like, all right. He didn't have a lot to say. Okay. So then I just started coming to meetings in earnest. And I didn't know how to be sober. I didn't know how to act like a human person is supposed to act. But I knew how to be crass and ugly. And, you know, when I got here, I had, like, safety pins and really crazy hair, and I wore Doc Martens and mini skirts, and I had a bad attitude, and I said fuck more than I do now, and I was pissed off, to be honest with you. I was really pissed, and I just kept coming to meetings, and I don't know why. I always share about my dear friend Jenny, and I can't talk about her without crying, but Jenny came, and she was beautiful. She was older, and she was dignified and graceful, and she was regal, and she always had her makeup on point because that was, and she had her nails done. She had jewelry that matched. She just looked beautiful, right? And she was everything I wanted to be. I was even cool with being in my 70s. It was good because she was perfect. And I wanted to be like her. And I don't know why. Probably because she's done this. But she just kept inviting me. Do you want to go to coffee with us? What did she have in common with me? What? What? Nothing. She was in her 70s. She'd lived her life, had her kids, had her grandkids, had a beautiful car. She was all of these things, but she had nothing in common with the foul mouth, bad attitude, angry shithead. But she invited me to come along anyhow. And she invited me to go to the women's meeting. And I remember going, like, what's that going to be like? I didn't really like women that much because they were your competition. So I didn't really want to go there, but she said, well, you come to ladies' meeting. And they were very clear when I first got here. They said that the men are going to want your ass and the women are going to save your ass. So come along with us. And I was like, okay. So I went with them. I think I was cuter then, but I went along with them, and I was like, nowadays you have that term where they talk about being in the center of the herd, but I predate that. So they didn't say that way back when. They just said to sit down, shut up, and listen. Take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. They were like not politically correct at all. You guys get it easy, but anyhow. Carl Bynum, I love that man to this day, and I miss him. And he used to say, do you really think you should put your butt on the table? Shouldn't you sit in a chair? And I was like, oh my God, it made me so angry, but I would move and sit in the chair, like, angry at him. And then I'd call my sponsor and be like, that fucking Carl. And she'd be like, oh, well, you're fine. You're staying sober, and so is Carl. You're fine. And I'd be like, Carl was like sober like 32 years at the time. So anyhow, so I just kept coming back here. I didn't get it. Like, and I want you to know that it took me many years. I was just reading, okay, like, this is super important to me because this thing is the deal. It says, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. And so, like, when I got here, I didn't know what the fuck this meant. What is this? This is a foreign fucking language. I didn't understand it. Sorry, Mom, I cuss a lot.
I know.
it's your fault. No. Anyhow, I didn't get it. They were like, read it, acceptance. Well, and I was just like, what? What does that mean? I don't get it. I was so angry. And my sponsor would just be like, just fake it till you make it, princess. Just fake it till you make it. So what I discovered was after a long period of time, things started to make sense to me. And so, like, if you're new-ish here and you feel like maybe you're not getting it as quickly, I will not lie to you. I was probably here, like, 10 years. 10 years clean and sober before any of this shit actually started to make sense to me. People would talk about acceptance in meetings, and I'd just be like, okay. Like, and I would talk about it, too, of course. You gotta talk a good game, but I don't know what the hell I was talking about. So... So then there has been a long period of reconstruction for me, and I am grateful that this program has been patient with me, right? Because this is not easy. I don't care what anybody else says. Like, this isn't easy. So, I know that when I was pretty newish, I had this feeling of like total anxiety, and I just wanted to die yet again. And once you've crossed that line, it's really easy to cross that line again, right? So like, it would be entirely too easy for me to try to kill myself again. And so I called my sponsor, and I love her to this day. I spoke to her today and yesterday. And I said, you know, I just want to die. I can't run this fast anymore. I can't run fast enough. And she said, well, then it sounds like you're on step 4 and that you should come on over. And I was like, oh. And I didn't want to do that, right? Who wants to do that? If you're here long enough, you've heard it made a searching and feral small inventory of ourselves, and you have to write it down. And I was like, fuck you. I'm not doing that. I have secrets. And I'm not going to do it. And she kept saying, you're only as sick as your secrets. And I was like, oh. So I went to her house. And I'm not going to lie. Because even when I was in my very best trying, I was still sick. There was this really cute guy that was her husband's sponsee. And he needed a ride. So I was like, okay. I'll give you a ride and I'll go. Like, sick, but anyhow, I showed up out there, and she said, well, this is where you're going to sit, and God bless her. Her and her husband were both in recovery, and her kids were impervious to alcoholics, I swear to God. So she just gave me the notebook, and she sat me at the table, and she said, you sit right here, and you just start writing. And I was like, how do we do that? And she goes, oh, you just want to complicate it. So she brought out the big book, and she's like, we're going to do it just like the big book says, and we have my 12 and 12, and she's like, you're going to do it just like it says, and we're going to make the columns, you're going to do the thing. And I was like, aw. But I did it because, honestly, I was terrified because this is the only place that really liked me that much. In other words, let me come back. So I was, like, desperate. I didn't want to feel the way I felt, and I knew that I couldn't run away. So what am I going to do? So I wrote, and I wrote, and she just kept us there. Well, her husband. Bill kept JR there, and I stayed with Red, and I did the thing, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and then she was like, are you done? And I was like, I don't know. So she sent me home, and she's like, keep writing, and then after just a few days, I finished writing, because back in the day, you didn't take 4 months to write an inventory. They were like, are you going to get drunk, or are you going to be sober? Are you going to fucking write? You're going to write it now. And I was like, okay, I'll do it, like you said. So I wrote and wrote and wrote until I didn't have anything else to write. And then she said, come over. It's time to do your fifth step. And I said, okay. And I showed up, right? And I had my thing, my notebook and my pen. And she's like, so is there anything else? How did she know, right? Is there anything else that you didn't write in the thing that you are holding on to? And I was like, she looked at me. I thought, what is she like? Got some kind of radar? But I was like, yeah, of course, there's that thing or two that you didn't want to put on paper. And she said, this is your last chance. And do you know, I have to share with you, I was either just so stupid that I didn't know better, or I was just so desperate to live differently and to not feel that way anymore that I did it. I wrote the shit that I didn't want anyone else to know in the entire world as long as I lived, and I wrote it down. And then she said, now you're going to share it with me. And I was like, ugh. No. And she's like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. And I always share this because I want people to understand. I believe this is the key to recovery for me. She said, come on, we're going to go in my room and we're going to talk about it. And she said, now we're going to invite God to be here. And I said, I'm out, bitch. And she stopped me and she said, Nicole, what do you think? God didn't see all that? And I was like, how dare you? How dare you? And she was like, let's be real, baby. Do you think God missed all that? Like, and he wasn't here for any of that? And I was like, oh. And do you know, the humbling of a sick alcoholic is a thing to behold. And I remember thinking, I can't bear to do that. And I can't bear to look at you. How do I say that to this person that I admire? And then she was everything beautiful and kind. Like, how do I do that? And I tell her all those dirty, bad things, right? And she said, well, this is what we're going to do, and you're going to be brave, and you're going to pray, and we're going to sit together. And I said, well, I can't look at your face. And she said, okay. And so we sat on her bed in her room, back to back, and I shared my inventory with her. And then when we got to the very end, she said, it's time for those things that you're holding on to. And do you know, I have to say, when I first started doing that inventory, I was terrified, right? I was terrified, shaking, sick to my stomach, thought I was going to die. By the time we were finishing, we had to go get our kids from the roller rink, and I'm like doing my inventory in a car full of roller rink kids, right? And they're like laughing, and she's going, you know, you can wait. And I'm like, no, I've got to do it now. So we get to the end, and she's like, it's time for those things that you're holding on to that you just can't say. And I just tried my best to get through that, and I did. And then I love it because she didn't just leave me with it. She's like, so the book says what to do next, so you're not just going to sit on this horrific shit. Now we're going to do the next thing with it. And I remember just going right through. And if you didn't do the steps that way, okay. You do them your way. I followed her direction, and her direction came out of the book. And so I've been sober 29 years. So if you got it down better, you go for it. I feel pretty good about the way we did it. And I was able to stay sober after that. And do you know, I was driving home. Now, I want you to know I was a kid. Like, you people are so lucky because you're grown-ups and you can maybe understand the words that you read and understand what acceptance is. I was a fucking kid. I'm in my car, I'm driving home, and I hadn't laughed. I mean, I'd laughed at you, but I hadn't laughed, like, in my soul for a long time. And I remember driving my car, and I felt this weird, like, bubbly thing, and I thought, what the fuck is that? And then I just, like, started to giggle. It's, like, 2:30 in the morning. I'm driving my car by myself, and I'm giggling. Like, and I remember calling her and saying, what the hell is that? And she said, that's called freedom, kid. Enjoy it. And I just went, oh, my God. And do you know, there have been very few things that I can say that I've done well in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I did do a thorough fourth and fifth. I have followed those steps. And, you know, I love a lot of people. If you're here long enough and you do anything that they don't approve of, you hear a lot of shit about it, let's be honest, okay? We laugh and we say, oh, we're not here to judge. But, yeah, you do. Okay?
Right.
My experience is you're judging the fuck out of each other.
Right.
So here's the reality. I live inside my skin, right? And I answer to my God. And I also have a person that I take direction from. And I do the best that I can to my ability today. My ability is different today than it was 20 years ago. Holy shit, I can actually say that too. And so, like, I'm grateful. So I jump around a lot, okay? I get emotional. I'm one of those. But I can tell you that my life has changed. At 10 years sober, I got married. I had had a lot of Mr. Right, and then I had a few Mrs. Right, and then I went back to Mr. Right, and I got pregnant by him. And he asked me to marry him, and I was like, oh, my God, what am I done? And I remember calling both my sponsor and, of all people, my aunt. And we talked about how I felt and what I was going to do, and here I am pregnant. And I made a decision to get married and have my children and to be with that man. And it's fine. Like, we stayed together, and I have three gorgeous kids. I think they're gorgeous. And I feel like it's one of the most incredible things that has ever happened to me. So if you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're better than me, okay. And if you think that motherhood isn't that big of a deal and you think something else is, that's okay. But for me, being a mother has been the most incredible fucking journey I can imagine. And yeah, I say fuck to my kids. And I am grateful. I have an 18-year-old son, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I have a 10-year-old son. I am the stepmother now, fast forward. I'm the stepmother to five other kids too, but to stay on topic. I have these beautiful kids, and I didn't even have them till I was 10 years sober, right? And I have learned to live better today. They said this thing, the road gets more narrow. I had no idea for a long time what that meant, but now I got it. And let me tell you, if you ain't putting the shit in and you're not living in bad behaviors, you're not going to be able to stand it either, right? Like, I can't drink, I can't whore, I can't do a lot of things that I did before to make that feeling go away, right? So now I actually have to do the right thing. I have to live this shit or I will die in recovery. And that's what I guess is so different about me than other people that I hear share their story, is that it is no longer. I have been relieved of the obsession to drink and use. I honestly don't think about it. I never hit a bump in the road and go, I need a margarita. Never, never happens, ever. But I do sometimes want to do bad things. I will term them bad. They are sick things. They are my defects of character. And I want to pick them up and fuck with them and do them again because they feel familiar to me. And then I make a shit mess out of my life. And then, seemingly without provocation, yeah, probably not. So I've had to learn to walk in a more narrow path. This is not easy for me. And it's okay because, see, today I take guidance, I take direction, and I don't do the same behaviors that I used to do. In fact, I'm kind of boring compared to what I used to be like. Really, I'm sorry, but I am kind of boring, and that's okay. Like, I have tried to live as a good example for my children. I have tried to live, as a good example because what AA gave me is a life to live. So I love AA. I love you people. I mean, some of you are crazy fuckers, but I still love you people. And, I decided here, fear, friends, fear. I was reading another, is it Fear of Fear, that story in here? I can never find it when I'm looking for it. But I read it this morning. I read 83 through 80-something. And then I'm not good at pages, Stan. You know the pages. Fear of Fear. I have the old big book. Sorry. On mine, it's in there, and it's on 321. But anyhow, I was reading about that today, and I really... Fear is why I did all the things I did, because I was afraid you wouldn't like me, you wouldn't accept me, you wouldn't let me come back. I was afraid you wouldn't love me. I was afraid of everything. So I came here and I started living differently and I started putting other stuff in here and then my behaviors could change. And let me just say this. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we sort of hammered people. Honestly, I've watched it for years. If you come in and you make a mistake, now we're all going to fuck with you about that mistake you made. And we're not going to ever let you live it down or forget it. At 1 year sober, I thought I'd met Mr. Right, and I left town, I joined the carnival. That's the truth. Okay? I've been sober 29 years, I still hear about it. Remember when you became a carny? I'm like, yes I do. And I did do it, and I'm not ashamed of it, but let's give each other a break. It's okay if you grow beyond that point that you did that thing when you were a year sober. I'm going to give you permission to not have to repeat that or feel guilty about it today. I'm going to guess that if you've stayed sober longer than a year and you've decided you don't want to be a carny anymore, I'm going to give you the grace to allow you to do that because it's none of my fucking business. But anyhow, I'm grateful because I learned how to do some other behaviors that felt better, right? So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was fucking terrified of the wind blowing, and I was married, and then that wasn't working, okay? And it's embarrassing to me, but my husband really liked to have sex with other people, not me. Well, I mean, technically, he liked me, but he liked them too, and that was horrible for me, right? At 10-something, 15 years sober, I should have my shit together. I should be able to go to meetings. The standard is like, here, right? I should be all of these things because you're looking at me and you're making those judgments and I'm making those judgments, right? No, I was living in misery and embarrassment, and it was shameful to me that that was what was happening, and I didn't have any fucking self-worth. But one day, I said, no, I'm not doing this anymore, and I don't know what happened. Well, God happened, but I went outside, and we're having a birthday party, SpongeBob bounce house, 40 people at my house. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and they're bouncing in the bounce house, and he's sexting somebody else, and I went outside and said, you have to leave. And he looked at me and he laughed and he said, what are you going to do without me? I said, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. I said, you can stay today and tomorrow you leave. And he didn't believe me. But do you know, I had had enough of not feeling good in that marriage, in that relationship. So I said goodbye to him. Boy, that was hard. Now, I didn't want to drink, but I did want to die. And I just came to meetings. I came to meetings. I talked to my sponsor and I prayed and I read that big book some. And that's not usually where I go for comfort. You know, it's usually the sponsor and the prayer and the writing. But I made it through that. And it's, I want to tell you about it because it's a miracle to me. So like there's miracles in recovery that come that aren't just not drinking. That's like the door opener. That's like the first prize. But then these other things are so cool. So when he left, I actually went to the county and I got on welfare. I don't care. Judge me if you need to. I didn't know what to do, and I just didn't want to do that anymore. There is a thing poking me a lot. Sorry. Anyhow, I went to the county, and I went on welfare, and I got welfare for myself and my kids. And then I was sitting around like, I don't know what to do. How am I going to support my kids like this? I can't be on welfare forever. What the hell am I going to do? And so they said, you should go to school. And I was like, I'm stupid. I can't go to school. And they were like, no, you can go to school. And I was like, ugh. So like years, I don't mean a couple minutes. I mean like my sponsor had been telling me for years I should go to school. And after like 15 years or so, I was like, well, maybe. And then it took me another about 5 years to warm up to the idea. So I was 22 years sober before I could face that fear, right? Single mother on cash aid with 3 kids, and I was only surviving in the home that I was in because my mother was our landlord and she let me pay cheap rent. Otherwise, I would have been homeless in my Suburban, which I loved that car. But I would have been homeless with my kids, right? And I thought, what am I going to do? So I showed up at the college and I asked, like I literally showed up there and I cried through the entire first meeting and the lady just sent me down the hall. She was like, you need to go to these people, they will help you. And I don't want to give a pitch for that department. All I can say is that God saw me there and he's had Donna send me to this other department. And those people could see. They helped people like me, and they could see that I was doing the very best that I could do just to show up that day. So they gave it to me, and like, honest to God, like, you know how you have a big chocolate bar, and it's got all these little, you know, like squares in it? So they gave me one little square, like, you do this and come back and see me when you're done with that. And I don't know how they knew how to baby step me like AA did, but they did. So then I did the first little step and I prayed and I cried and I did the whole thing. And then I did the second little step there and prayed and cried and did the whole thing. And like, I couldn't buy a parking permit. This was a very big deal. I remembered spending hours talking to my sponsor about how I couldn't go to college because I couldn't buy a parking permit. How am I going to park? What am I going to do? And she was just like, I trust that God will take care of you with parking. How about you? Do you trust God? And I was like, no, not really. But anyhow, long story short, I just baby stepped all the way through. So then I had been a stay-at-home mother. So he worked and I didn't, and I stayed home with my kids. So you know how like AA, you have to have a total psychic change and they tell you the only thing you have to change is everything? Yeah? Okay, so then when I went to college, those fuckers told me that again. And I was like, wait a minute. But what happened was that I just started doing the actions because it appeared to be the next right thing, right? It looked like God was calling for me to become self-sufficient, which I had never been. So long story short is I went to school and I got a degree and then I got a job. And I hadn't done that in like a really, really long time. And I became employable. And then I started being able to do other things, you know. And so like, so I graduated last year in May with my bachelor's degree. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I never, I want you to know, from the depths of my soul, I couldn't buy a fucking parking permit. Now I have a bachelor's degree. That's amazing. But, and see what that is it's what God's given to me. It's like this extra little bonus gift for like doing what I was supposed to do. And I feel really grateful because I have faced things in recovery. My dad died when I was a new person, and I had promised myself if anyone died that I was going to drink. If I got married, I was going to drink. If I turned 21, I was going to drink. If, you know, like I had a lot of plans about drinking again. And so then when he did die, that was really earth-shattering for me, and I just stayed sober. And he's actually on the honor roll for the club because he had gotten into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he stayed sober. And he died two weeks short of his four-year birthday in AA. Every once in a while, when you guys are laughing in a meeting, sometimes I can hear him laugh too. And I miss him to this day, right? I do. But it's okay because, you know, he died sober, and he was a good example of how to do that. And I feel very grateful today. You know, like, I'm not perfect. So if you want to judge me, go right ahead. Don't judge the newcomers. Bring it right here. Because this old bag can take it. And, you know, I came to meetings with my children. If you see women in meetings with their children, shut up about it. You think they want to take their kids to AA? No. They're going to any lengths to be sober. Fuck, it's hard. So anyhow, sorry. I came to meetings with my children, and I just kept doing it. I'm like a rash. You people couldn't get rid of me. And I feel like I have come a long way. You know, I survived the separation. I survived my dad's death. I've lost many friends in recovery. I'm sorry to say that when Carl Bynum died, I cried. And many others, Jenny died, I cried. Because those were the people that I looked up to, and they taught me how to be sober. And you know, when I got to AA, I wanted to be a lady. I just wanted to be a lady. And what I was angry with the mohawk and a safety pin and like Doc Martens and a bad mouth and a bad attitude. And so my sponsor was just like, you just keep coming back. You just keep coming back. And we'll work on that one thing at a time. And so like today I can come to a meeting. I don't have any safety pins today. I mean, like, in my skin. And I can, like, wear a dress and take a shower and try to look what I think is nice. And it's a long way from what I started with. And maybe that doesn't sound like recovery to you. But if I didn't have all those little things, I couldn't stay here, right? If I didn't have the inside job, I couldn't fucking stay here because I couldn't look you people in the eye. I can't run from my past, and I don't want to create wreckage anymore so that I have to run in my present. It's terrible, and now I have these kids to drag along. It's not good. So I feel blessed. One of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with happened to us a couple years ago. And my little girl came home and said that she had been molested. So for this right now, I want you to understand that AA gives us something that we can battle monsters with and face that with grace and dignity. And it doesn't mean you won't feel angry, sad, lost, unhappy. But what you will feel is connected to your people here if you let them help you walk through that. And I'm shocked that we could walk through it. Would I ever choose for my child to be molested? No. That's simple. I had been the survivor of incest as a small kid. And then when I got my 9-month chip in AA, I hooked up with the wrong guy and he took me out and raped me in the pomo. A sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous did that. And do you think that I don't remember those things? I do. But what I have today is I have this program that gives me coping skills that I never had before. So this beautiful child came to me at 9 years old and said that she had been molested, and what do you do with that? What do you do? It's like your nightmare come true. And I just did what AA has taught me to do. I did the next right indicated thing. I called the police and I stood by her side, and then we went to court and we did all the things. And today, she's a beautiful 12-year-old. And this is just something that we carry in our family package of stuff that we've learned to walk through. But without AA, how would I do that? Like, how would I know how to handle that? I wouldn't know how. I wouldn't know the first thing on how to be a parent, right? I mean, my mom was a good mom, but she didn't teach me that stuff. I had to learn by doing it, right? And that wasn't easy. And I can tell you that I have a lot to be grateful for, right? But you can't dull my shine. Whether I'm your cup of tea or not, that's okay, right? Like, we come in AA and we find people that we just love. They feel like home to us, and that's wonderful. And then we find others that we know that we should walk around. So if I'm that person for you and I don't carry the message to you, come back. Try again. Somebody else might have a better fit for you, because we're all here. I like it. When I first got sober, they said we got an outfit of misfits where I fit. And I'm grateful that AA has seen fit to keep me. And I am not always a good example. Sometimes I'm a good, bad example. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I have people like Jessica in my life. And I can't tell you how blessed I am to have Zach in my life. When I knew that I was going to be here today, I actually asked Zach to be here too. Because today, and I'm not trying to get in his pants, for God's sakes, but like, some people are just precious treasures to me. And so, like, watching Zach be able to be clean and sober is a huge gift. And what I was kind of hoping is that he could come celebrate with me, and then we'll be there to celebrate for you too, right? So I've lost so many people in recovery that they don't know how to stay here, right? You have to have that serenity to match calamity. And I challenge you to find it out there by yourself. But if you can be here and walk with the others, it'll work. This is not magic. And I shouldn't tell you, but there's no AA police. There really isn't. But if you just do those steps, if you read the book, if you figure out the God thing in your own time, and you find some people to be your tribe, then you're going to be okay, right? And you don't ever have to drink again. You also don't have to create wreckage either, right? You can be free of that. So I appreciate you being patient with me and letting me be here tonight to celebrate with you. Thank you.
Wow. Let's give it up one more time for Mr. Allen.